This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Yeheyes Wuhib in Washington. Coming up on Africa News Tonight.
At 5 o'clock, you have to be in the yard. Our kids can't play, we can't go to the shops.
That's a resident in the South African town of Krugersdorp, where a film crew was attacked by a large group of suspected illegal miners. Details coming up. Also, gunmen today killed 8 Nigerian security personnel in the country's central Kogi state. We have these stories and more ahead on Africa News Tonight. We start with our top story. In South Africa, 84 men have appeared in court on various charges following a brutal attack on a film crew in the town of Krugersdorp near Johannesburg. Scores of men surrounded the crew who were shooting a music video near several old mines on Friday night. Police say 8 women were gang-raped. Other crew members were also severely assaulted. Darren Taylor reports.
South Africa has some of the highest murder, rape and robbery rates in the world, so citizens have become accustomed to violent crime. But the Krugersdorp attack was so vicious that it shocked the nation.
10 men will stand queue here. We are raped one by the other. 6 men will stand here, rape one of the other. How cruel, heartless were they? In front of others, they continue exchanging victims.
District Police Commissioner Fred Kekana says it's one of the worst crimes he's been involved with in his 27 years on the force. Surrounded by giant mine dumps in an area of the town called West Village, there was no escape for the 22-member film crew as the horde descended on them. Some of the attackers were armed with high-caliber rifles and handguns. National Police Commissioner Beki Cele told reporters his officers arrested scores of suspects shortly after they began hunting the perpetrators.
They are found on the mountains, on the bushes, and everywhere they are here. 2 of them resisted and fought the police, and they were shot dead. There is a strong suspicion that they are foreign nationals rather than being South Africans. The people that were raped are all South Africans.
Kekana later confirmed that most of the suspects in custody are undocumented foreigners, including a few identified by informants as known criminals in the area.
We mobilized ourselves, our crime prevention team, in civilian clothes. We had to walk in, park the vehicles, walk into those addresses and spots where they say they are hiding. We managed to arrest 4 Basotho nationals, 4 Zimbabwean nationals, 7 Mozambicans, 1 Cameroonian, and 1 Malawian. We have done already our DNA. We took their buccal samples. We are profiling them. All of them will be standing identity parade. We'll expect our victims to be there to see whether amongst the people which they can identify.
Kekana says there's a good chance those arrested are wanted for other violent crimes. West Village residents say they've been living in fear of illegal miners, known in South Africa as Zama Zamas, for more than a decade. Police say Zama Zama gang members are mostly undocumented foreign migrants and are active mostly in Gauteng province, where hundreds of old mines date back to the gold rush of the mid-1800s to early 1900s. Locals say the Zama Zama gangs, usually clad in balaclavas and blankets, do what they please in the settlement.
We are not talking crime in West Village. We talk terrorism. West Village is under siege, in the hands of these trigger-happy beings.
Another resident says the gangs work underground by day and emerge from the mine shafts at night.
We have now become prisoners in our own house. At 5 o'clock, you have to be in the yard. Our kids can't play. We can't go to the shops.
For Trele, the incident's further proof that some foreigners, legal and illegal, are very much part of organized crime in South Africa. Operation Dudula, an organization formed to drive undocumented migrants out of the country, has indicated it'll use the Krugersdorp atrocity to pressure the government to stop illegal immigration. Human rights groups are concerned that what's happened in Krugersdorp will spark hate crimes against foreigners across South Africa. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
Mali's military government has lashed out at French President Emmanuel Macron, accusing him of having a neo-colonial attitude and stirring up ethnic hatred. Annie Ratzenberg reports from Bamako, Mali.
The official statement was read by government spokesperson Colonel Abdoulaye Maiga on Mali's state TV and radio station ORTM and posted to the station's Facebook page. Maiga referenced statements made by French President Emmanuel Macron on the situation in Mali during Macron's visit to Guinea-Bissau, the last stop in a tour of West Africa in which he pledged support to several countries in the fight against extremism.
Le gouvernement de la transition exige du président Macron d'abandonner définitivement.
The government of the transition demands President Macron definitively abandon his neocolonial, paternalistic, and condescending stance, he says. Maiga also called Macron's remarks, in which he deplored systematic violence targeting the Fulani population, hateful and defamatory, saying they are likely to arouse ethnic hatred in Mali. Both the Malian and French armies have been accused of violence against the Fulani community in recent years during anti-terrorism operations. The UN accused France of killing 19 civilians during an airstrike on the Fulani village of Bounty, Mali in 2021. And human rights organizations have accused the Malian army of arbitrarily killing dozens of men from the Fulani ethnic group on several occasions. Maiga also called Macron's remarks expressing concern over the presence of Wagner mercenaries in Mali erroneous accusations. Mali has continually denied working with mercenaries since France first launched accusations that Wagner mercenaries were present in Mali in December of last year, claiming only to work with official Russian trainers. Russian President Vladimir Putin denied an official Russian presence in Mali during a press conference with the French president in February. France announced the withdrawal of its troops from Mali this year, partly over concerns that Mali is working with mercenaries, ending an almost decade-long deployment which began when France intervened after northern Mali was taken over by Islamist militants in 2012. In March, Human Rights Watch released a report in which several residents of Moura, Mali, attested to witnessing mercenaries committing human rights abuses and extrajudicial killings with the Malian army over a period of 5 days. Annie Reisenberg for VOA News, Bamako, Mali.
Heavy rains, flooding, and landslides have left at least 24 people dead in the eastern Uganda city of Mbali, about 300 kilometers northeast of Kampala. The French news agency AFP says witnesses report bodies floating in the muddy floodwaters of the Nabuyonga and Namatala rivers. The city's resident commissioner says the downpour cut off roads, washed away cars and crops, and submerged buildings. Prime Minister Ahmada Washaki blamed the destruction in part to environmental damage from human settlement along riverbanks and the foothills of neighboring Mount Elgon. The Associated Press notes that while some people have over the years agreed to be relocated, others refuse to leave their ancestral lands. The Uganda Red Cross says it's working with local communities and district management to support victims, though submerged roads make assistance a challenge. Relief officials, including the police and marine forces, say they expect the death toll to rise. The UN peacekeeping mission in the Democratic Republic of Congo has arrested UN peacekeeping troops suspected of opening fire on a Ugandan border post, killing at least 2 people and injuring 15 others. Victor Amonga reports.
In a statement, the UN mission at the Congo-Uganda border at Kasindi said the soldiers from AMONUSCO Intervention Brigade Force were returning from leave when they opened fire at the border post. The Sunday incident took place in DRC as the troops crossed from Uganda back into Congo. The special representative of the Secretary General of the UN in Congo, Binto Keita, described the incident as unspeakable and irresponsible behavior and said the soldiers opened fire for unexplained reasons. Keita said the UN had contacted the soldiers' countries of origin so that legal proceedings can be initiated against the perpetrators. DRC authorities said among those injured during the incident were two policemen who were working at the barrier and eight civilians. Congolese government spokesman Patrick Muyaya said the peacekeepers involved in the incident will be suspended from Congo pending the outcome of plans to withdraw the entire MONUSCO from DRC. Nearly 20 people have been killed in eastern Congo since protests began July 25th. The protesters who stormed the UN base in Goma accused the mission of failing to achieve peace since they began operations in Congo 20 years ago. The mission in Goma Monday paid tribute to four of its members who were killed during the anti-MONUSCO protest in North Kivu. In a tweet, MONUSCO said the ceremony took place in the presence of the leadership of the mission and the head of the UN's Department of Peace Operations. Victoria Amunga for VOA News, Nairobi.
The United Nations Refugee Agency says clashes this year between the Democratic Republic of Congo's army and the rebel group M23 have displaced more than 160,000 people. Ruth Omar visited the makeshift camps north of Goma and has this report.
20-year-old Rebecca Nyirarukundo, her husband and 1-year-old son fled clashes in June between the Congolese army and rebels around the Rutshuru territory. They found shelter at this school tent camp for the displaced in Nyiragongo territory, along with hundreds of others. She says, "We arrived here on foot because we had no transportation and had no food. I went 5 days without cooking and my child became weak. I took him to the health center," she says, "but nothing worked." Her son was malnourished, got sick, and on July 17, he died. In the town of Kanyaruchinya, those newly displaced keep arriving, stretching the few resources available, says Teo Musekura, a leader in the displaced persons camp. Since we have been here, he says, we have no assistance. I have already buried four people because of the lack of water, food and shelter, he says. We are suffering a lot. The UN Refugee Agency, or UNHCR, says clashes since March between the Congolese National Army and the rebel March 23 movement have forced more than 160,000 people to flee their homes. The UNHCR says it has received less than one-fifth of a $225 million budget request for the DRC that was based on needs before the fighting broke out. Medical aid is also stretched in Kanyaruchinya as the town has only one mobile hospital, says the local resident Mambo Kawaya. The hospital was installed in 2021 under the leadership of the president, but there has been no improvement in terms of equipment and logistics. The government has been giving almost nothing lately, and this has caused problems with health care. Meanwhile, protests this week against the UN peacekeeping mission in eastern Congo turned violent and left at least 15 people dead. The demonstrators accused the peacekeeping force, known as MONUSCO, of failing to stabilize the region and keep them safe. She says, MONUSCO must leave. We do not want them because we have suffered enough. We are suffering everywhere, in Beni, and MONUSCO is there without reacting. Today, she says, we are invaded by the M23, and they are here without reacting. We do not want them. They must leave. Whether or not, one blames the peacekeepers for the situation, it is clear that safety in the towns near Goma is a scarce commodity. Ruth Omar Esther for VOA News, Nyiragongo Territory, Democratic Republic of Congo.
The new U.S. envoy for the Horn of Africa, Mike Hammer, who arrived in Addis Ababa, Ethiopia on Friday, discussed with Ethiopian officials the upcoming peace talks with Tigray rebels and urged unrestricted aid deliveries to stricken areas. According to the French news agency AFP, he also reviewed the situation regarding the Grand Ethiopian Renaissance Dam, GERD, the large-scale hydroelectric project on the Blue Nile. During a visit to Egypt last week, Hammer said the U.S. is supporting a diplomatic way forward under the African Union's auspices that will yield a deal which benefits every citizen along the Nile. Egypt lodged a protest Friday with the UN Security Council against Ethiopian plans to fill the dam's reservoir for a third year without agreement from downstream countries. The multi-billion dollar GERD is said to be the largest hydroelectric project in Africa, but has been at the center of a dispute with Egypt and Sudan ever since work began in 2011. Addis Ababa deems the GERD essential for the electrification of development of Africa's second most populous country. But Cairo and Khartoum fear it could threaten their access to vital Nile waters. Somali President Hassan Sheikh Mohamud has urged citizens to join the government's effort to help ease drought's impact. The UN says 7.7 million Somalis have been affected. Mohamed Hassan reports from Mogadishu.
Speaking at a mosque in the country's capital, Mogadishu, Somali President Hassan Sheikh Mohamud called on citizens to join his government's efforts to help Somalis devastated by the worst drought in more than 40 years in the Horn of Africa nation. Mohamud said those affected the most by the drought are elderly and children who are experiencing severe malnutrition. He says the drought and its circumstances have worsened and it now has reached a state of famine and death. The livestock are already gone. There was much hunger, he said, but the government has been doing whatever it can to help people and the world is helping. He emphasized that the Somali people and those abroad need to double their efforts to reach a lot of people in time of great need. Mohamud, who was elected in May by the country's parliament for the second time, and he announced shortly after taking office that his government's priority was to battle the current prolonged drought that has devastated 90% of the country. He also appointed a special envoy for drought response to facilitate the humanitarian activities in the country. According to the United Nations Office for Humanitarian Affairs, OCHA, 7.7 Somalis have been affected by the drought and nearly a million people have been displaced. Drought-related malnutrition has killed more than 500 children since January of this year. The UN Migration Agency, IOM, in Somalia told the VOA on Saturday the people displaced from the drought are living under extreme conditions. Claudia Rosal is the IOM Media and Communication Officer, and she said the numbers of those displaced by the drought have been steadily increasing since the beginning of this year.
Those that are newly displaced due to drought are on top of the 2.9 million people that were already internally displaced in Somalia due to natural hazards and conflict over the years. And now what we are preoccupied is that in just 1 year, we are seeing almost 1 million people newly displaced due to the drought conditions. And most of them, they won't be able to go back to their communities of origin because they have lost everything. They were pastoralists or they were relying on agriculture, and right now the land can't provide any more for them and their families.
The Somali Prime Minister's office said the drought has affected more than 15 million livestock, 28% of Somalia's total livestock population, while killing more than 2 million other animals. Somalia's Southern Jubaland State Minister of Planning, Abdirahman Abdi Ahmed, told the VOA Somali service that 200 children have died because of drought-related illnesses during the past 3 months. Mohamed Daisane, VOA News, Mogadishu, Somalia.
Gunmen killed 8 Nigerian security personnel, including 3 policemen and 5 vigilantes, in an ambush in central Kogi State. In a statement, state spokesman Onogwa Mohammed confirmed that suspected bandits ambushed and killed 8 security officers. No group claimed responsibility for the attack, but Kogi State has seen an uptick in attacks recently, including some claimed by Islamic State extremists operating outside their usual base in the northeast. Security will be a major issue in next February's election to replace President Muhammadu Buhari, who is under increasing pressure over the country's worsening violence. Kogi Governor Yahya Bello suspended a traditional chief of the area and questioned the political administrator of the district over Saturday's killings, according to the French news agency AFP. Bello vowed to deal ruthlessly with anybody who romances with criminal elements, no matter how highly placed they are. Critics in Zimbabwe are worried about what they call shrinking civic space. Protests are banned, some activists are perpetually denied bail, and trials take too long in the courts. Those who have been granted bail are familiar faces at the courts as their cases drag on. The government counters that civil society organizations and government critics are worshippers of violence who want to oust the administration. From Harare, reporter Kudzaiza Nawashi has the details.
Peter Mutasa is chairperson of the Crisis in Zimbabwe Coalition, made up of the majority of the country's civic organizations pushing for democracy and human rights.
We are witnessing a lot of persecution against civil society activists, trade unionists, and opposition political party activists. Some are in prison on trumped up charges, in our view. And many are facing different forms of insecurities and vulnerabilities.
As a result, Mutasa and his organization decided to act.
This is the reason why we notified the police of our intention to have a peaceful procession in the capital city, Harare, and to hand over a petition to the Parliament of Zimbabwe and the Zimbabwe Human Rights Commission. These are rights guaranteed in the constitution of the country. Unfortunately, the police did not approve our notification. It barred our procession. And this is a recent example of how the democratic space is shrinking and how citizens' constitutional rights are severely restricted.
Mutasa says everything points to a violent election season, potentially complicated by the Private Voluntary Organizations Bill, currently in Parliament. Critics say if it sails through, it may be used to target non-profit organizations. Rashid Mukundu is a political analyst.
There's no doubt that the PVO amendment bill is coming to target pro-democracy in NGOs and those that defend human rights and protect victims of human rights abuses in Zimbabwe. The downside of the law is that it will certainly limit the reach of NGOs that mostly work in democracy and human rights in terms of accessing communities, mostly rural areas.
Tafadzwa Mugwadi, who is Director of Information for the ruling ZANU-PF party, defended the PVO bill.
There's nothing bad about it. Those organizations are calling government to account, isn't it? They want everyone, public officials, to be accountable. Fair and fine, but they must also be prepared to be accountable themselves.
The role of NGOs in Zimbabwe is extensive. Some raise awareness of people's rights, while others seek accountability from public officials and government, or provide free legal aid to human rights abuse victims. All these have often been viewed as anti-government groups seeking to force out the government. Mugwadi says such groups are provoking the government.
It is them, those civil society organizations and those who want government critics, who are worshippers of violence and who rejoice at burning houses and threatening of violence in our communities.
Zimbabwe's state mouthpiece, The Herald, has claims the country needs the PVO bill, especially with elections set for 2023, amid suspicions that millions of dollars will be channeled through NGOs to fund violence, prop up activists, and even bankroll terrorism. For VOA, this is Kudzai Zvinavashe from Harare.
And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehiya Swuhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. On behalf of our producer, Mokbilia Barrow, and our engineer, Pete Hundley, thanks for choosing The Voice of America.